From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life.
Listen to him.
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Ben Affleck's new movie Argo is in the hunt for Oscar. The director and actor talks about reviving his career after a stint in movie jail. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my banter companion, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, big news in the world of entertainment media. Let me say at the outset, I work for The Hollywood Reporter, so I have a ferret in the fight. But Jay Penske, the owner of Deadline, a website that many in the industry read, has acquired the storied Variety, which has been very much on the fade in the last few years.
Yeah, it's a 107-year-old publication, but I have to say, and I think you would agree, the last couple of years hasn't been nearly as relevant as it was even 10 and certainly 20 years ago when it was a must-read. I mean, Jay Penske is not spending a lot of money on this acquisition. It's $25 million, which to me seems like a pretty bargain basement fire sale price.
Sure.
Probably could have bought it for a lot more a couple of years ago. And I think the real question is, what happens to it now? I mean, Penske is backed by a $9 billion hedge fund run by Dan Loeb, who's been very active in Yahoo in his investment there. So it's not as if they need this to work. I think the more interesting question is, what is their plan? They've immediately said they're going to take down the paywall, which will make Variety's content free to non-subscribers. But the real question is, what niche does it serve? Can it compete with The Hollywood Reporter? Can it compete with Deadline? Can it compete with the LA Times? Will it take a lot of investment, a bigger newsroom, to actually make Variety viable again?
And, you know, John, it seemed like, you know, I mean, I've been at The Hollywood Reporter for just over 2 years. It seemed before that like The Hollywood Reporter would die and go away and Variety would survive. And then a big hedge fund bought The Hollywood Reporter, and they've created this weekly glossy magazine, which has kind of established itself very quickly. And so I don't know if there's a lot of room in the print space if you want to do a similar play. And, you know, there is already Deadline and The Hollywood Reporter and the LA Times online. I just don't know, but we'll certainly want to watch and figure it out.
Well, I would imagine the plan does not involve a continuing print version of Variety as it exists. I mean, a good gust of wind can come up and Variety will be blown across the state. There's no advertising in it. It's very thin. I can't imagine that the print version as it's designed and executed now will stick around very long.
Meanwhile, the fall TV season has gotten off to a start of sorts. It's not exactly a great start. A couple of Wall Street analysts have used the word, you know, disappointing to talk about the way the new shows are doing. And we've had the first cancellation. CBS Made in Jersey bit the dust after only two airings, and I think there will be more to come.
Yeah, probably Fox's The Mob Doctor is on a very short leash right now. I mean, the numbers are really disturbing. If you look at the most important demographic, which is adults age 18 to 49, CBS and Fox are both off more than 20%. So far this season, ABC is down about 13%. And NBC, thanks largely to The Voice and Revolution and the new comedies Go On and New Normal, is up 12% in that category. But overall, a very disappointing start. And I think there's a number of explanations. One, obviously, the shows aren't connecting very well. And two, I think you have to look at football. And ESPN and the NFL Network are getting huge ratings for their football broadcasts. I was speaking to a marketing person at a studio the other day, and she was talking about buying advertising. She said, sports is the only thing I want to buy now because it's the only thing that people are watching and not fast-forwarding through. So not just in terms of ratings, but in terms of advertising interest, I think the networks have serious problems.
Although we should mention that NBC is truly having a better run right now than it has in years. It's not like it's the breakthrough of breakthroughs, but it is performing better than it has in a long time with shows that have somewhat worked. The Voice continues to work for NBC. Matthew Perry's new sitcom Go On is sort of working. I mean, J.J. Abrams' Revolution is working. it's not like they have the breakout hit that would redeem the network, but it is doing relatively and surprisingly well.
I think the important word there is relatively well, because not only is NBC coming back from a disastrous couple of years, but you have to look at, and we certainly have talked a lot about, the new competition, and not just cable, it's YouTube, it's Netflix, it's companies that we used to think were not in the content business, but have become networks and content providers of their own. So even if the networks get through this season, they have a lot of worries on the horizon.
Yeah, YouTube is lining up one channel after another with, they've just announced some talent like Sarah Silverman coming in. They're going to have such a multiplicity of channels. I don't know how exactly you're going to find these things, but as the internet and your television continue to be married, that kind of programming, I guess, will become increasingly easy to locate and record and watch, whatever. Netflix is on the brink of a very bold experiment. House of Cards, which is their first really big original programming experiment. They previously did Lilyhammer, but House of Cards is a remake of a British series with Kevin Spacey starring and David Fincher, a truly A-list Hollywood director, directing. That is going to premiere in February, and they are going to put all 13 episodes on at the same time.
Yeah, which is, you know, goes to the binge viewing that I think a lot of kids generally right now do, where they'll sit down and watch an entire season of Mad Men in one afternoon. I mean, this is a $100 million investment by Netflix. And Bo Willimon, who is the writer behind the series and wrote Ides of March, said that TV, and I'm quoting now, will not be TV 5 years from now. Everyone will be streaming. And I think he's partially right about that. But one show on a company like Netflix is not overnight going to turn around the TV business. But I think it's an important development, given how much money is invested in this. If House of Cards works, there are going to be a lot of companies like Netflix. They're going to do similar shows. And I think Bo Willimon, in terms of streaming, is probably right, even if he's a little aggressive on the timing.
It will be super interesting to see how this experiment turns out and what lessons are learned. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And you can banter about Hollywood news on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. Coming up later in the show, Ben Affleck remembers the bad old days, but first, how he landed in the director's chair. Ben Affleck directed and stars in the new movie Argo. He plays a CIA agent who set up a phony Hollywood movie project. It was a ruse to rescue six American diplomats stranded in Iran during the hostage crisis following the revolution in 1979.
Fade in on a starship landing, an exotic Middle Eastern vibe. Women gather offering ecstatic libations to the sky gods. Argo, science fantasy adventure.
It's in turnaround.
Can we get the option?
Why do we need the option?
You're worried about the Ayatollah? Try the WGA.
Argo is Affleck's third outing as a director. His 2010 heist movie, The Town, was a hit. It grossed more than $150 million worldwide. Affleck had made his directing debut in 2007 with the dark drama Gone, Baby Gone, which starred his brother, Casey. That movie wasn't a big box office performer, but it established Affleck's credibility as a director, and that was a game changer for him. Because for a while, it looked like Affleck's career was doomed. After a strong start, he went into rehab and appeared in a string of bombs, including Gigli and Jersey Girl, and he fell hard for pop diva Jennifer Lopez. He became tabloid fodder, part of a flamboyant couple dubbed Bennifer. Now, that kind of coverage can permanently transform a movie star's image, and not in a good way. But Gone, Baby, Gone was a turning point, and now, just 5 years later, Affleck is everywhere, promoting a new movie that had Oscar buzz even before it opened in theaters. You are the star and the director, so the pressure's on you for the next few months.
Indeed. I'm feeling the pressure, I assure you.
Yeah, you're already tired, and this is kickoff.
Well, I did a 5-day, you know, television junket, and then we had screenings at night, and they had Q&As. So I just kind of talked myself into a little cold, but deep inside, I'm wildly enthusiastic, and I'm very very excited for our interview.
Okay, so I want to go back, and I know I'm trying not to hit the exact same beats that every other reporter is asking, but our show is The Business, so we come at it from a somewhat different angle.
Sure. That's no one's asking that.
I actually wrote a piece about you in 2004 for the LA Times about, you know, how your career was off the rails and was terrible. And I didn't want to write the really obvious story.
I'm going to have to look this story up now before we continue with this.
Patrick Weitzel, your agent, was on the record in this, as was Kevin Smith. And what I found was that people were they were really, you know, more sad about the state of affairs at that point than anything else. I mean, there was a feeling that here you were, this enormous talent, and you were in movie jail. And we actually had Matt Damon on the show a few months ago, and he talked about this era of becoming a big star and how challenging it is and how, in fact, you know, you end up in movie jail. You can end up in movie jail. And you have done the most remarkable thing, I think, that I've witnessed in terms of, you know, going through this period of veering away from the person that your fans thought you were as an actor and getting into that movie jail and then getting so dramatically out of it again. And I think it's an amazing achievement. I don't know that I've seen anybody execute that. And I want to just talk a little bit about how you did it.
Escaping from movie jail. I did it with a lockpick.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean. 2004, I had a bunch of movies that hadn't worked. Even more than that, frankly, I think, and this is interesting, is that because there are a lot of people that have been in movies that didn't work and went on and continue to go on and have opportunities because they had established themselves. But the media itself, it was a sort of a snake eating its own tail. And it was I was kind of – the paparazzi chased me around, took a million pictures of me, and then I was kind of damned for being overexposed. So I had this catch-22. I couldn't hide in the house. And if I went out, it appeared that I was sort of like chasing this fame and celebrity, which is a thing that people find particularly objectionable. And I kind of had to also realize, like, doesn't matter if that's not true. That's what people think, and you have to deal with that. Although knowing that this wasn't really about me, this was about some, fractured reflection of me generated primarily by a tabloid press that whose journalistic values revolve most centrally around getting readers and are often just finding ways to pigeonhole, you know, stories in there that don't exactly fit or aren't exactly right or even that they know aren't true. So for me, I found it frustrating. On the one hand, I certainly took responsibility for the movies that I had done that didn't work. Some of them I did for the wrong reasons. Some of them should have worked and were good bets and just didn't. The problem was I didn't have it sort of broken up. If I had a good movie, a bad movie, a good movie, a bad movie, I would have been in much better shape than clustering movies that worked and then a bunch that didn't. But really, as I said, I think it was punishing, you know, and until to this day, there's this notion that, you know, I have something to apologize for in the relationships that I've had with other people. And, you know, frankly, I just plainly disagree with that. Maybe there are people who have another way of looking at it and they're welcome to it, but that doesn't mean I have to go along with it. I've been really fortunate to have a lot of really good people in my life who I like, and not everybody understands that, and I get it, but I don't apologize for that.
Kevin Smith, he actually suggested at the time that there was an element of a racial or a bigotry element in this because something about the relationship with Jennifer Lopez. And I'm going to read you a quote he gave me at the time, not addressing that point, but what he said. He said, Hugh Grant got caught with a hooker and he didn't have to take it this badly. Eddie Murphy got caught with a tranny hooker and he didn't have to take it this badly either. And his explanation partly for why you were singled out that way was because he thought there was some kind of reaction.
Because I wasn't smart enough to find a tranny hooker, evidently.
So let's just walk through. You're at the point where I'm writing this in 2004, and then by 2007, Gone Baby Gone is in theaters, which you have directed. How did that come to pass?
Look, you know, I wasn't stupid, at least to the extent that I recognized what was happening, that this kind of coverage was going to eat me up, that any time you have that much exposure in the press, it kind of rubs away at the facade of mystery or of uncertainty. It makes it harder for audiences to suspend their disbelief when they watch your movies. So I thought, well, I have to get away from this. I went away and spent some time, you know, in privately, quietly, out of the view of everything. And then I thought, what do I really want to do? This is obviously a good opportunity for me to start directing, which I've always wanted to do. And I now feel like I've learned some kind of interesting lessons around this. And some, strangely, some of them felt applicable to Gone Baby Gone. I had my brother do the movie so I could it could just be about me directing and not about anything else. And it was a bit of a obviously a bit of a turnaround at the time. I just perceived it as, this is something I want to do and I'm going to try it, and this seems like as good a time as any. And so I went ahead and did it. And after I did it the first time, it just completely hooked me.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking with actor-director Ben Affleck, whose new movie, Argo, is in theaters now. Affleck made his directing debut with the 2007 film Gone Baby Gone. He didn't appear in that film, but it rebooted his career as a director and an actor. He credits the former chairman of the Disney studio for giving him a chance to direct.
Dick Cook, who was at Disney, was a friend of mine from when we worked together, and I had been working on the script, Gone Baby Gone, and it was at Paramount. And then Sherry Lansing left, and Brad Grey was taking over, and you know, everybody knows that when the new guy comes in, the old projects go away.
Right.
So as a parting, running up and grabbing onto the helicopter off the roof while it took off, I took that script with me, and they let me sell it and turn around. Dick Cook picked it up.
At
and
Disney.
I was lucky. Well, it was Disney, but they had just parted ways with Harvey and Bob, and they want to restart Miramax.
I see.
I think they thought, what better sort of way to restart Miramax? This is dark. This is edgy. This is a guy that's associated with Miramax in the past. Let's try it.
And did you stay out of it? You said you cast your brother so you wouldn't have to worry about acting and directing. I mean, was there also any thought, you know, that it would be a distraction just to be in your own film at that point and maybe best to stay behind the camera for another few minutes?
Yeah, I think the perception would have been Ben Affleck acting in a movie and parenthetically, you know, he directed it too. As opposed to, and I hate referring to myself in the third person.
I understand but, completely.
but, you know, getting myself out of it, really out of what's the optics of what gets seen by the audience and the public, I thought would help it just be judged on its merit. Because I was accustomed to this notion of the sort of baggage people carried around about me and very frustrated because I didn't feel that it correlated with who I was or what I had to offer. So I thought, okay, this is the best way I can find to mitigate that. And I also had something to kind of prove.
I mean, you must have been very happy at that point when it worked.
I was happy when it worked. You know, we did okay. We did really well on DVD.
Right.
Which
it was.
What everybody
I mean, it
tells
wasn't when
you.
I say you did well. I don't mean that it was a big commercial hit, but
right.
that it was respected and well received.
Exactly, which was much more important to me at the time than coming out of the gate with a huge opening weekend.
Did that make it easier to get the town as a green light? Did that kind of open the gates for you?
It was like, I think I was looked at as like an actor who did, you know, an interesting sort of gritty little urban drama. And I didn't have a lot of people saying to me, like, get over here, you know, I want you to do, you know, this huge thing for us. What I did was Jeff Robinoff, who ran Warner Brothers, what happened was he called me up. He said, I want to meet with you. I went in and met with him and he goes, I think you can, you know, I really believe in you. I want to work with you. I want you to look through all of our stuff. I want you to be part of Warner Brothers and our family. I mean, it was very overwhelming and really moving in a way because here was somebody really stepping up and saying, I believe in you.
Do you think any other studio would look at a movie like that at this stage besides Warner Brothers and be willing to go with it?
I don't know. I don't know the other studios, but they didn't. I mean, nobody said, hey, come, you know, come do this, come be part of our gang. You can be in, you know, our clubhouse. And these guys did, and you know, I went ahead and did the town and then the Argo for them. So I hope they're happy about it. I hope they make money because I do feel genuinely responsible for when somebody gives me stewardship over a certain amount of movie. And I've said to them, yes, this can work. Yes, we believe in this. I feel really responsible that it work. You know, I feel that I'm on the hook.
Coming up after a short break, Ben Affleck talks about the fleeting nature of show business success. If you want to comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness.
This podcast is produced by KCRW, a nonprofit public radio station based in Los Angeles. We rely on listeners like you. Support the podcasts you love by becoming a member. Go to kcrw.com/join.
I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Our guest today is Ben Affleck, who appears in the upcoming Terrence Malick movie, To the Wonder. He also stars in and directed Argo, in which he plays a CIA agent who concocts a daring scheme to rescue diplomats hiding in Iran during the hostage crisis.
Aliens and robots? Yes, sir.
You're telling me that there is a movie company in Hollywood right now that is funded by the CIA?
Yes, sir.
What's wrong with the bikes again?
We tried to get the message upstairs, sir.
You think this is more plausible than teachers?
Yes, we do. One, there are no more foreign teachers in Iran.
And we think everybody knows Hollywood people. And everybody knows they'd shoot in Stalingrad with Pol Pot directing if it would sell tickets. There are only bad options. It's about finding the best one.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir. By far.
The United States government has just sanctioned your science fiction movie.
Thank you, sir.
Argo was attracting awards buzz even before it opened. It's the third feature that Affleck has directed, and it cements his reputation as a serious filmmaker. That's quite a comeback from a low in 2004, when he'd starred in A String of Bombs and was tabloid fodder, thanks to his flamboyant relationship with Jennifer Lopez. It's not easy for a star to recover when his image takes that kind of beating, but Affleck has done it. His comeback started when he directed his brother Casey in the drama Gone Baby Gone, and then directed himself in the 2010 movie The Town.
I got this script, I rewrote it, I developed it, I went through this whole thing, I liked the part, and I thought, I'm going to play the part in this, because I don't want to be away for, you know, strategic reasons, if nothing else. I didn't want to be out of the sort of market of acting for 2 years. It's such a short, you know, this business was such a short memory.
Right.
So I wanted to keep myself kind of present, at least, in this movie. And then once I directed it, and I had so much fun acting in it, and I had so much fun making it, it was terrifying, and it was hard, and it was a gigantic amount of work, but it was a blast. That's why I thought, you know, when I read the script to Argo, it was just really clear to me that I loved the movie so much that I had to be in it. And luckily, I had a good relationship with the director. So,
and this business of directing yourself, I think I read where you said the thing that you learned, and I'm not sure what was this. I know you talked to George Clooney and you talked to Clint Eastwood. Is that right? Am I remembering?
I talked to a lot of them: Clint Eastwood, Warren Beatty, George Clooney, Kevin Costner. A lot of the guys I thought did it really, really right.
And you, one of them said to you, don't be shy about shooting a ton of footage of yourself.
Yeah, I got that note from almost everybody. Everybody I talked to said the biggest mistake actor directors make is to just sort of do 10 takes on this woman, 10 takes on that guy. They get to themselves and they want to be chivalrous, and so they do one take and move on. And what that means is that you get back to the editing room and you just don't have enough material to cut your scene. So being duly forewarned, I did the opposite. I would shoot like 14 takes on me because I just didn't want to let that happen. Although it definitely meant facing the stares of people who wanted to go home. It's 2 a.m, it's raining, and you have to look at them and say, I think we'll do one more on me.
And did you have to then in the editing room, do you look at it and sort of go like, is it sort of like, you know, that thing people have about looking at pictures of themselves? And
it is. And that actually serves me well, too, because it means that I can chop through a lot of material very quickly because I'll just loathe the whole take. Just the whole thing looks ridiculous. And there's only a few nuggets even in 14 takes that I can find. And so then the effort becomes cobbling together the few pieces I actually like.
So at this point, is this the form? I mean, you are obviously you're acting in films that you're not directing. Do you feel like when you direct, you're going to be able to step behind the camera completely, or you always feel like you need to be a little bit in there?
You know, I think it's a material based thing. I would direct movies where there was no part for me if I just thought this is incredible. I have to do it. By the same token, if I find something right now in my stage of my life, I think I probably would want to star in the movie if I had the opportunity to do that. It's just the actor, you know, in me that's so used to, you know, showing up with their sides at this crummy TV audition and, you know, wanting to get ahead. I don't know if you ever get rid of that feeling. But I wanted to, you know, I think still I'm at a point where I'd like to be in movies. But eventually I'll start, I think, directing and not starring.
So this feeling that you mentioned of feeling like you're just an actor showing up with your sides and you never lose that, I think people might be kind of shocked that an actor of your stature and fame would still feel that.
I don't know any actors who don't still feel that. You know, when I went to dinner with George and Grant before this.
That's George Clooney and Grant
George,
Hasselhoff.
Yes, George Clooney and Grant Hasselhoff, who are the producers of the movie. And before we did a publicity thing. And, you know, it was very much the things you heard most were about the times you struggle, the times you know what I mean? You know, everybody still talks like an actor trying to get ahead. That mentality is kind of seared into some, you know, inner reptile brain part of our thinking. And in some ways, it never really goes away. Yes, you put on top the fact, you know, some actors become egomaniacal, some actors, you know, take on all kinds of unpleasant characteristics, and some mature into perfectly pleasant people. But I believe that rooted in that is this thing of, you know, if you've been made to hunt for your food, you kind of never forget that, you know, like a stray dog.
Yes, you're like Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind. I'll never be hungry again.
That's me. You would be shocked at how many times I get that comparison.
Damn, I thought that was original to me. No. Well, now, having directed three films, you got some movies under your belt, and then you act in somebody else's film. I'm thinking right now of To the Wonder. And, you know, a lot of people seem to be entirely baffled by this movie. I'm wondering, when you do that movie and you're a director yourself, what do? You just get your thing and you perform and you trust that director? Or is there part of you thinking also at the moment, what the heck is going on in the movie?
Well, Terry's a great guy and a brilliant guy. And it's just a joy and a pleasure to be around. The movies that he makes are not movies that I would make. But, you know, they're not movies that many people would make. They're Terrence Malick movies. And so sometimes I think there's like a stroke of brilliance, and sometimes I think I wish there was more of a linear, there was more linear storytelling here. But it's more for me about like picking up small things, tactic, you know, little flares, tricks, you know, things that those guys do, because that stuff can work in any context. So it was fun to work for him in that way. The movie is very, it's just impressionistic. I mean, it's sort of silent. Olga, the woman that I'm kind of obsessed with, she talks in French. But there's not a clear narrative. It sort of moves elliptically. It's a kind of, it's dreamlike. It's a tone poem, you know. It's all those things.
So you just are, you sign on and you're in, and that's the end of that. You're making a Terrence Malick movie.
I think no matter what director you work with, it's your job to, especially as a director, I've become convinced of this. It's your job
you
to
see
sign
talent
on.
Differently now.
Exactly. You're the actor. You come and make the director's movie. Don't take the job if you're not going to do that, because that's how this works. So when I show up to work with Terry or a much lesser director, I just go, you know what? This is who it is, and I'm not going to – this is the boss. This is the director. I'm going to try to dovetail my efforts to meet his goals, his or her goals. And, you know, sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
Is the next thing going to be you directing Matt Damon in the Whitey Bulger movie?
We're set up to do Whitey Bulger with me directing Matt, but the script's not finished yet. So I don't know if it's next or if it's down the road. But Matt doesn't really matter. He could get older and still play the part, so it's not that rush.
And so you don't know exactly what is next?
I don't know exactly what is next. Do you have any ideas?
I think you're probably going to be like running around the world promoting this movie for the immediate future.
I am doing that. But you don't have any like stories about like a cop with a corrupt cop with a heart of gold? Anything like that?
Give me a few minutes. I'll see if I can come up with one. Ben Affleck is an actor and director. His latest movie is Argo. Thank you so much for doing this today and get some rest.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry I have a cold on the show, but thank you. It's been a pleasure nonetheless.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can hear the podcast wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.